Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
I'm coming to you from my Apple car.
You have, ooh, what's it like? Tell me more.
I took an apple and I carved it out and turned it into a car.
Unsubscribe.
Yeah. All right, well, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.
Ba-doop. No, I wrote a thing for Macworld this week about the Apple car, which is, it's a lot of me sort of saying I understand why Apple would think about doing a car. And there was like the Motor Trend story where they did like a 3D render of what they thought a car would be, which is always the problem with artist conceptions, is it's like one artist who is given a short-term job to do some illustrations for a story about a future product versus an entire team of people working with real constraints, but also given lots of time to build a product that has to exist in the real world. So it's like, I had that moment looking at the Motor Trend story where I was like, yeah, this is weird and probably not anything like what it will actually be. And then at the same time, there was also that story that Apple is like hiring a bunch of dissident German automotive guys
who want
they've defected from East Germany. And no, they're like mad at the German car makers for being too stodgy. What, German car maker stodgy? No. And hiring them for like a new place where in Berlin where they're also working on Apple car stuff. And I just think it's interesting for a product that may never exist or might not exist for years and years that there were those two stories. So I wrote this thing for Macworld where it's basically like, I see why they're doing it, I think it's intriguing, and yet I have a hard time seeing the end game because I'm not sure Apple really wants to be the maker of, you know, hundreds of thousands of cars. Seems a little strange to me. So it's a weird story, but it's funny that it came up in the news sort of twice in the last week.
Well, it's funny because also in that way, I wrote a story about for Macworld not this week but last week about why in the name of the Lord would Apple want to be in the car business?
Yeah.
As I was sitting in a cafe waiting for my car to get fixed and wondering, you know, what do you really want to be maintaining garages and service centers for cars? Like that seems like a pain. I don't know, maybe they improve that experience a lot, but it seems like people forget, like, you don't just like design a product and put it out there in the world and then it works great, right? Like there's ongoing costs, yeah, and maintenance and upgrades and yeah, all this different stuff that has to be taken care of. There's a whole supply chain and a whole service component, and it's a really complicated business. It's not like they can just make a car and then be like, you drive it off the Apple lot,
yeah,
and then never go back.
The counter argument would be like the Apple retail stores, for example, where,
yeah, exactly,
you know, there's a lot of stuff that is Apple that's beneath the waterline entirely, like their phone support and how are they building the tools that allow them to swap in new screens for broken screens and all this, yep, stuff that we don't see because, yep, they're not like shiny Apple products. They're like the infrastructure, and Apple retail we can see. And I think you could probably have made an argument before Apple started those retail stores. It's like, is Apple really going to have hundreds of retail stores all over the world and have to train all those employees and to have all that? And the answer is, well, yeah. And they did it and it worked. And, you know, Tesla does this. Tesla,
sure,
although again,
absolutely,
we focus on the car, but they've got their showrooms everywhere and they're all company owned. They could have gone, I mean, arguably whether they could have actually done this, but
mostly
there are dealers, right, that, yeah, are owned by other people and you supply them stuff. And Tesla's like, no, it's going to be like an Apple store. It's all us. We sell,
right,
the cars direct and service them and all of that. And there's a Tesla service place like a few miles from my house that I drive past every now and then. And, you know, the fancy showroom is in the mall, and
right,
then the service,
yep,
place
here
is not in the mall.
Well, and then they built out a huge network of like charging stations,
yeah,
too, in
more
a bunch of places.
Infrastructure, right?
It really is a fascinating business. And I mean, I could certainly envision, as I did in that piece, you know, maybe a really nice Apple service center where you take your car in and they've got free Wi-Fi and maybe a little cafe or something where you can like sit and wait for your car to get fixed in a very comfortable environment, you know, very much like the, maybe you even browse other Apple products as you're waiting for your car to get serviced. But it is, I mean, it's not to say they can't do any of those things, but at the same time, you also wonder about the model of, you know, this is a whole new industry with a whole new set of conditions in terms of like, how do we make things profitable? How do we, you know, maintain an organization all around this?
Right.
And none of this is to argue that they can't do it, because certainly we've seen every indication that whatever they put their mind to, they can accomplish. There is still an overriding question of why, what drives them to do this? Is it really just, we think the car experience sucks and we want to make a better one. Maybe. I mean, and that's, that fits with their sort of MO, but it does seem like a lot of stuff that requires a much different level or a much different category of skills and skill sets, like moving from a computer to a phone that goes in your pocket that is still kind of a computer.
Yeah,
is kind of not a big move.
That's what I said in my piece, is like, you know, I know they took computer off the name, and at the time we wouldn't think of a phone as a computer, but if you look, if you take one step back, you don't even need to take two steps, one step back, it's like everything they make pretty much is a computer, right? We don't call them computers, but they're computers. And a car is not a computer, right? It has aspects, like they, like, right, Jeff Williams said, oh, it's the ultimate mobile device. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. And it's got a battery and it's got software. I get it. But, you know, it's not, it's more than that. There's other key technology in there that isn't what Apple is used to building. So it's way outside their comfort zone. But at the same time, I do, you know, part of me thinks, well, basically what they're saying is, why should we just let Tesla do this? If they, especially if you really believe, and I think Elon Musk absolutely believes this, and I suspect Apple believes this too, that there's just no way that the big car companies are going to do this fast enough, right? They're too big, they're too entrenched, they're the incumbents in the market, so they are feeling all of those, innovators' dilemma problems where, you know, yeah, they may all realize that by 2030, the way that they're doing business today is not going to work. But the fact is, they got to sell cars today and tomorrow and next year.
Yep.
And so they never.
Someone's
got to really
make that first move.
Exactly.
And you're going to take the risk, and maybe that pays off really big for you, or maybe it flops.
And Apple's got, you know, what do they have? I forget even the number now, but it's like more than $100 billion, certainly, in cash, right?
Apple, I think it's close to $200. Yeah.
It's getting to $200. They got lots of money. They can spend it, and they got investors who want growth too, right? And entering new markets. So I get all of that. It's just seeing it is hard for me now, because basically what we're saying, you know, if you follow this, it's basically Apple wants to do what Tesla is doing, except what Apple doesn't want to do is sort of publicly have test models that cost $100,000,
right?
Over the course, and then another one that costs, like, Tesla's doing a lot of stuff in public right now, and Apple's playing catch up with Tesla, that's for sure. But also, I think the end game is that if in 4 years, 5 years, Tesla is selling these high tech electric self-driving ish cars. That's where Apple wants to get. Is Apple wants to get to a point where the two, I would say, best places to buy a, you know, new generation car are Tesla and Apple, and not, you know, not the old car makers, because they're going to be lagging behind. And I don't think that's unreasonable. I think they could totally do that.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a lot of weird things about that market. I mean, you know, but stuff that meshes really well with the stuff that Apple's done in the past. For example, I mean, you look at the market for cars is fairly large, right? Like, lots of, especially in America, where people tend to drive, and when many families own at least one, if not more than one car. But at the same time, Apple tends to compete in the higher ends of markets, right? Like, they're not necessarily down there competing with Ford or Chevy, you know, and they're competing with Tesla. Tesla's not a cheap car. I mean, even their cheap car that they just announced, the Model 3, is still over $30,000, which is a lot of money for a car. And a lot of people can't afford that. But, you know, if you are appealing to sort of a luxury or a higher end of the market, then there's certainly a lot of money to be made there.
Right.
It also meshes really well, I think, with some of the stuff they've stated goals on the environment, right? Because if you're building, first of all, let's dispense with any theories that this car is not electric, right?
Yeah,
because
right.
There's no, they would never get involved in building a gas car. That seems like a terrible idea. You know, the idea that they push the environmental, how much they care about the environment and all the work that they've done to create sustainable energy and stuff like that makes a lot of sense that they want to come out with an electric car, which is something that actually, you know, works to actively combat, you know, emissions and all that good stuff. So that there are things that mesh or that make sense when you look at it. I think it really depends on sort of what angle you're coming at it from, because I also wonder then about things where, well, I mean, are you going to sell everybody an Apple car? Like, is there a point when we get to the, you know, like, everybody is a... Yeah, exactly. Everybody's a customer for the Apple car. Is it going to come down that much in price? What about, like, you know, are you going to upgrade your car regularly? I mean, new model cars come out all the time, right? Every year there's a new model of most cars, whether they're incremental or major rethinks. And the car companies, you know, have done that forever, and they're still alive, right? Like, it's not like they're dying because people don't buy a new car every year.
Well, Tesla, you know, Tesla does some slipstream updates of their cars, but they also do lots of software updates.
Yep.
And so your car gets better essentially as it goes on instead of worse, which is another
good Apple thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Another computer interesting idea. Well, ideally, right. I mean, you enter all the jokes about Apple and software quality and all that. And again, software quality in a car way more important than,
When my phone crashes, I restart it. When my car crashes, I have a bigger problem.
It's a huge problem. I think the luxury car thing is interesting too, because Apple is not like, Apple is the affordable luxury, and I know Gruber has talked about that a lot, but I think it's right. It's like Apple is a premium product. They make a premium product. There's no doubt about it. If you want to buy a laptop, you can get one way cheaper than the MacBook, right? But what the people feel is, well, yes, but I'm paying for quality. I'm not in the market for the lowest end. I want to buy something that's higher quality than that. And at that point, I might as well buy the Apple product because it's really good and it's in that range. So what's that range for a car? It's probably not $70,000.
No.
It's probably more like the Tesla 3.
30 to 40, yeah.
And in the 30 range, where they might not make a $12,000 car, right? But they're going to, but they would, I think they fail if an Apple car ultimately is just a super high priced toy, because that doesn't say Apple to me, right? Whatever that price is, there's got to be a price that is in reach of, I would say, in reach of middle class people. Even if it's a little spendy, it's still in reach, and you get, and the perception is, yeah, it's a little more expensive, but I'm getting more value by doing it, as opposed to, oh, this is a luxury item. It's way too expensive. It's not practical.
If you buy the Apple Car Edition, though, it's made of gold.
Yes, it's made of gold, and the seats are made of the leather of cows that have been massaged for many years.
Taken to the moon.
Yeah,
moon cows.
Moon leather. So I don't know. I think part of it is our conception of Apple, right? This is a shift in Apple perception that's required, but the reason I joke about it, but I kind of like the ultimate mobile device joke, is that it gets at something that is important and that I'm not sure everybody sees when they hear talk about cars like this, which is, and because Tesla's this way too, it's like cars, if you give it enough time, if you give it 5 or 10 or 15 years, and even your current car has a computer in it, right? But it's very hard not to look out 10, 20 years when you see what's going on with Google's work and with Tesla's work and other companies with sensors and self-driving features, which are not necessarily 100% autonomous, but still are intelligent driving features. And you think about entertainment systems and the importance of those. It's very easy to make the argument that the core expertise of a car maker 15 years from now is going to be like software and power management and internet connectivity and
everything, you know, but engines,
reading
basically.
From sensors and an electric engine is going to be important, and a drivetrain and wheels and safety and all those things are there. But I think you could really argue that the expertise of computer companies, technology companies, and the expertise of car companies today are probably about equal. If they're trying to steal the bacon in 2025, right, 2030. Because I think the car companies, although they're trying to get better, like I said, they're incumbents, it's hard for them. They're not good at that stuff. Like,
they're terrible.
Most car companies, the entertainment systems are OEM'd. It's somebody else's thing that they're just sticking in there. They're not integrated. They're bad at software. They're bad at customer service in a way like you experience that, where it's like, we'll take it to the dealer and we'll do a USB upload that'll take an hour. And it's just not. So are they really going to make, what's more likely, that the car companies are going to get really good at being a computer mobile device type company, you know, skills? Or is it more likely that companies that can do that well can learn the car company skills?
I'm picturing the incumbent car company CEOs. Apple's not just going to drive in here and
Yeah, yeah. And I feel for them because I think, I mean, I've always thought that that was a possibility with Tesla, is that at some point Tesla's going to do this so well that a car company is going to be just like, uncle, you know, we're going to buy you and your cars because we couldn't do this on our own. We needed somebody on the outside to do it. But, you know, I don't see Apple working with partners or anything like that, right? If Apple wants to do this, they want complete control.
Were some reports that they were trying to work both with BMW and with Daimler on some of this stuff, but that it all kind of fell apart, probably precisely for the reasons we're discussing, which is everybody, especially when you put groups of engineers together from totally different disciplines, right? And to set them at each other. There's going to be a lot of argument. Yeah, that too. There's going to be a lot of back and forth, a lot of argument about that sort of, you know, what is the most efficient way to make this happen. Right. And again, when you're trying to disrupt an industry, and I hate that word, but that's actually what legitimately is sort of happening here.
Yeah.
The last thing you want is to sort of burden yourself down with the way things are now, right? This is the way we've always made cars.
Well, and the innovator's dilemma, I mean, one of the other challenges of being an incumbent is that you know, BMW can't throw away Daimler-Benz cannot throw away all of the value that's in the BMW or Mercedes names, right? They can't. They have an existing audience that they need to serve. You get trapped in it, but it's like that, you know, it's in a way a good kind of trapped because you're making money and you got a good business, but it also means you can't totally radically change everything because your fear is that you're going to lose your existing business. And Apple doesn't have a business here, so they can do whatever and then find a business. And it's tough. That's why that story out of Berlin, that there are all of these, like I said, dissidents, like people frustrated with the pace of innovation at the German car companies and being recruited by Apple to work in a car lab, basically, in Berlin. I find that really intriguing because the Germans, you know, they do a lot of clever things with cars. They care a lot about cars. There's a lot of German engineering car culture, and I'm fascinated by the idea that Apple may be picking off German engineers. And competitively, it's probably easier to recruit German engineers in Berlin than it is to recruit car engineers in Silicon Valley, right? Apparently it's quite brutally pushing and pulling between Tesla and Apple, especially.
Yeah,
a lot of the traditional car makers have a really hard time hiring anybody or keeping anybody because these tech companies are investing so much in this. So that's another brain drain problem that's happening at the other car companies.
Well, what's interesting about this is my question is sort of how long can Apple keep this project under wraps, given the amount of things we've already seen. You know, I think we're at the stage where there's, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah.
There's enough stories about this that it's clear it's something Apple is investigating. Whether or not it's a product that eventually makes it to market is another question. Although at a certain point when you've invested, you know, so much time and energy and money into developing a product, I kind of feel like, you know, unless you really want to be brutal about it and say, okay, we did that, but it's really just not working, we're going to throw it out. And I can see Apple doing that, but that's a hard thing to do after you've invested a lot of time and energy. So this is a lot harder to keep under wraps than a phone or a watch, right?
I feel like this is going to be a really interesting test of Apple's new approach here. I gotta say, I think we're going to see something unlike any product launch from Apple ever before with this. If this is really coming to fruition, I think they're not going to do what Google does, which is like, hey, let's call 20 members of the press to a rooftop where we've got a weird car that's going to move around, right? I think it's more likely that they're going to have like a controlled release of information where Tim Cook's going to be somewhere and somebody's going to ask him a question. And instead of saying, you know, I obviously can't comment, and they're already being coy about it in a way that they wouldn't otherwise, I think, have been in the past. At some point, he's probably going to say, look, you've seen the reports. Of course, we're interested in cars. We're working on it. It's way too soon. But I think that will happen. I think they will confirm that they're working on it at some point and not even be coy about it. And then you're going to get that story that is planted somewhere Who knows what news source it will be? Wired, Bloomberg, New York Times, who knows where?
Inside the Apple car.
There will be a story that is that, right? That is like, here's what Apple's working on. Or they will do some sort of very controlled event for a small number of journalists where they show like a prototype of their technology, right? But on an existing car or something like that, and talk about some of the issues. And they're revealing that they're doing it and what they're thinking, and they're setting the groundwork and they're setting expectations. But I think it's going to be something like that. It's going to be like a Rolling Thunder kind of thing, where it's like little bits here and there, and keeping it in the public eye until they're at the point where they kind of have to show something.
Right. And like Tesla, I assume that they will have to announce that this is a thing that's happening well in advance of actually, they can't do their usual, you know, you can drive one out of here today,
no,
right?
Like, you know, the Apple Watch, it took them 6 months to ship it. The iPhone, it took them 5 months to ship it. It's going to be like that.
It's probably going to be, I would imagine, even more in advance at that point.
We're going to take our orders and put down $1,000 like Elon Musk, right?
Hey.
And get in line for the Apple car, whatever they call it.
But yeah, I don't know what you think here, but I'm guessing that this product is still at least, I mean, you know, people are saying things like 2020 or something like that. I think it's probably at least 3 or 4 years out at this point.
Oh, yeah.
I would guess.
Yeah, I mean, I've been throwing around 2020 just because it's not only a nice round number, but that seems reasonable to me, that this is a big deal, and there's a lot of work to be done here. And so that's my guess is that it's going to take a while, and that they're going to keep talking about it because they are going to have to, because their leaks are out there, but it'll be a little less traditional, but it's going to be a while. They've got, even if they've been working on this for a couple of years, I mean, they've got so much to learn. It's going to be very interesting to see what they do. The thing that makes me, when I was talking about artist conceptions, I mean, one of the things that makes me sad is that all the artist conception stuff is like what we know today. So like the artist conception, you know, like I said, it's not fair. I think the guy did some nice designs. He's an automotive designer. He's done mock-up designs before. I don't think the Apple car is going to look anything like his mock-up, but I think it's, I give him credit for working with a group of journalists essentially to come up with a mock-up. But on the inside, there's a mock-up that made me shake my head, where there's like literally there's an Apple menu in the upper left-hand corner of the windshield. And I just thought, no, that's not what it's going to be. What they're working on for, you know, a period of a long, you know, 5 years, let's say 6 years before potentially they release a product, they're working on new stuff. It's going to be new. It's going to be different. That's the point. Yeah. Remember the iPhone mock-ups that were just like an iPod with a slider and a numerical keypad? It's like, that's not very imaginative. And I don't blame the person for doing it. It's like literally all you can do if you're on the outside is patch together stuff that we already know about a company and say, well, I guess this is what they'll do. They'll make a car that looks like an iPhone. And that's not it.
It's like theorizing about a sequel, like a movie sequel based on, you know, only the things that you've seen come before, you know, when it's a movie sequel that's like 30 years later, right? For example.
Honestly,
looking at
the reports, I've never been in a Tesla, but looking at what people say about Tesla stuff, I do wonder sometimes if one of Apple's advantages over Tesla is going to be a focus on the in-car experience, because my understanding is that even the people who really love their Teslas don't love the controls on the inside.
I've been in a Model S, I thought it's very nice. Like, so the things that I feel like they are pretty good at are the sort of physical aspects of the interior experience. But there are some super weird things about the interior, in terms of like so there's a gigantic touchscreen. And if you've seen the interior pictures of the Model 3, which basically just look like there's an iPad glued to the dashboard, that seems crazy to me. The Model S interior looks a little bit more like a regular car, except where you have that maybe small touchscreen in your console, they have a gigantic one. What's weird about it is that it has like, it does a lot of stuff, and in some ways it basically has like a split screen mode that like on your iPad, where you can do like two things at once, but it has like a web browser in it, which I find super weird. Yeah. I mean, like, it's for like looking up like POIs and like, you know, oh, I want to look up this restaurant that we're going to and whatever. And it does navigation and all that stuff too. But
this is the thing, right? It's like Tesla doesn't have their own mobile operating system that they could fold into a car, right? And Apple does. Yeah. So Apple's got a big advantage on that stuff. Like, they can make a really nice in-car like software experience for the user interface. Right. And Apple's totally into that kind of idea, right?
So I feel they tried that with CarPlay, and I think the biggest thing they realized is it's impossible. They did a, you know, an impressive job in some ways of saying like, okay, there's all these different OEM built systems that are going to be in all these different cars. We're going to try and make something that works with all of them. And I think they discovered just how hard that is and remembered why they didn't get into the PC clone business, really, right? It's like you have to maintain compatibility with all these different systems. You have to make sure that whatever UI you're using makes sense in the context of that particular car. You have to adapt their touchscreens, physical controls, voice commands, all of that stuff. And that's a lot of work to do. It's a lot of compatibility testing. And the results were, as you might predict, very uneven.
Yeah.
Some places it seems to work pretty well, some places it seems to not work very well. And so if they can have control once again, as they like to do over the whole process.
How do you solve this? The answer is make your own damn car.
So I wondered if that was part of the part of the failure of CarPlay was them saying, you know what, let's just do the whole thing. And I wouldn't be surprised in some ways. Maybe they feel like they can solve some problems. And I think that's what it comes down to is we've all driven in cars. We've all ridden in cars. There's a lot of... First of all, cars are fundamentally unchanged for the last century, right?
Like, yeah, in a lot
of
ways.
Your car is in many ways the same car it was before. And a lot of the stuff that's been added in, the technology that's been improved, often feels like kind of a bolt-on. And so this is an opportunity to sort of go back to the very basics and build it from the ground up, which I think also appeals to Apple, is to sort of reinvent these things, right? Because that's what it does. It doesn't necessarily create brand new products. It reinvents existing industries. And there's certainly no industry more in need of reinvention than the car, probably. So, but I, at the same time, I wonder about things, you know, for years and years, people said that Apple's, you know, going to get in the TV, you know, make a television, right?
Yeah,
and
Gene Munster.
And that never materialized for, I think, many reasons, which are all pretty clear. In some ways, I it surprises me that they'll go into the car industry because at least the TV seemed adjacent. But there were problems with that in terms of the commoditization of that product line, etc. But yeah, it's still kind of hard to wrap my head around, is I guess what I get down to the end of this. And it's not that I don't believe it. It's just that there's so little conception or basis for trying to imagine not only what the product looks like, but how this fits into the business.
Yeah.
That it's kind of like you're sort of, there's a lot of here. Not stuff that I say like, oh, that's stupid. That will never happen. More like, yeah, how does this work?
How do we, right. I think that's exactly it. Is I have a hard time envisioning some of the aspects of it. And it's, yeah, I don't know. But I forgive me, everybody, if you've heard this before, but the short version of why they would even do this is, I mean, it's some of what I said before. It's like, look, they've got money. They know that the technology industry is, the streets of the technology industry are littered with the bodies of companies that used to be at the top of their game, right? You know, it doesn't last. You've always got to be looking for the next thing. This car thing, we are at the point, I think everybody would agree, even the existing car makers, where the car 20 years from now is going to be completely different from what it is now because of adopting electric technology and because of sensors allowing software on the car to do things, whether it's a completely self-driving car or it's just kind of auto-drivey kind of things. That stuff is going to happen. It's already happening, and it's absolutely going to happen. So it's a huge time of change. So you look at that and you say, all right, we have skills there. There's going to be a big change. We got money. Let's give it a shot. And it's the same thing that motivates a lot of those Alphabet companies that are not Google, core Google, to do wild stuff like self-driving cars and other stuff like that. It's like, let's place some bets on some of the stuff in the future. So I get why they're doing it, and I'm not against them doing it, because I do think that they have skills that could really be brought to bear here. But when I think like, okay, but in 5 years, Tim Cook's going to be standing on stage somewhere explaining his new car models. That is harder for me to see. And it just may take 5 years for us all to get used to the idea of what they're doing here. But, you know, I'm interested in what they've got to do. And I think a lot of people out there who have lots of Apple products, their home is full of Apple products. I think there's some trepidation all of us feel too, of like, oh man, am I going to have to get an Apple car?
Oh man, that's gonna be a heck of a line item on my expense report.
That's a tough one, yeah, right? Right? And I don't, yeah, it's, but I don't think Apple's gonna be in it to make the 20th anniversary Mac of cars, right? A weird $100,000 car that I don't think, even if they start way more expensive than they end up, I keep feeling like they're gonna be, ultimately they want to get a lot lower than that. But at the same time, I do expect that arguments against the Apple car when it's shipping are going to be the same as arguments against other Apple products, which is, come on, you can get a car for way cheaper than that.
Yep.
And then somebody's going to say, yes, but if you spend this, it's actually pretty comparable and better in a lot of ways than the other cars who have the same price. But, you know, there's no Corolla of the Apple car set. They don't go down there, but they play kind of higher up.
That's where the Android cars are.
Yeah, exactly. Google's self-driving cars.
And then, I have to
actually, that was one more thing about this, which is hanging over all of this. You mentioned the Google self-driving cars. Hanging over all of this is the prospect: what if people don't own cars anymore in 20 years because they're all just fleets of self-driving cars? Now, I recommend people listen to a couple weeks ago ATP episode where John Siracusa expressed his skepticism about this, and I think he makes some good, really good points about how, you know, self-driving cars, it's unlikely that our kids, you know, like my son is 11. It's unlikely that that he's going to not need a driver's license, right? He's going to need a driver's license because even if Bay Area roads and interstate freeways and things like that are navigable by self-driving cars, it's highly unlikely that more obscure parts of, let's say, the United States, let alone other parts of the world, are going to be navigable by computers, because they've got to be like laser mapped, and the roads have to be maintained with lines and things so that the car sensors can read them. And it's unlikely.
Unless there is a quantum leap forward in artificial intelligence and processing.
Yeah, right. You know, if Google drives another 10 million miles and they figure it out. But I do think that is one of those risks that you have to throw out, a threat. If you're doing a little SWOT analysis of the car market, that is a threat that's out there. Is what if the global car market ends up being much smaller than it is today? Because it's a really, right, cars are really inefficient. Most of the time they're spent parked, right?
Yep.
And so if you could get rid of all the cars and replace them with self-driving cars, and you pay a fee and you call the car when you want one and it comes within a minute and takes you where you want to go, then there are way fewer cars in service at that point. And what's the model for car makers there? Is that as profitable a business? And is that a business that Apple would want to be in, where they're supplying a fleet of self-driving cars to people? I don't think it's likely anytime soon, but I do feel like you've got to at least ask the question, like, are you getting into the car business right at the moment when the car business is a terrible business to be in, because everything's just going to be a robot Uber?
Yeah, it's certainly among the risks. I have a hard time imagining that will be the case, especially in the U.S., where I think that there's a philosophical argument to the car in the U.S., right? That's the independence and all that.
We have a lot of car culture, and we also have, somebody asked me on Twitter today, like when we were talking about WWDC attendees, staying in places like Oakland or Burlingame, places that are reachable by train but aren't in downtown San Francisco, and saving a lot of money. And his response was, do Americans really need to be told to look at public transit? And it's like, you got to understand, America's really big, and public transit doesn't go everywhere, partially because we don't fund it, but partially because it's a really big country, and a lot of people don't realize how far flung a lot of stuff is, and it's not so practical. So
it's part of why our trains suck.
It is one of the reasons why our trains are terrible, the ones that we even have, and then we have so many that we don't have. So that's all, you know. There's the American car culture. That's a part of it. But it's such a big country that will the elites in New York City be entirely shuttled by self-driving cars in the next 15, 20 years? I would say it's possible. And maybe even a place like the Bay Area, I would say that there are certain places that could get, like, this place is now clear for the self-driving fleets to operate. And someplace like Manhattan, it actually might make a whole lot of sense.
Very grid-based, very logical.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, like, very particular rules.
And finite. You can map it. You can have it all together. The only thing you have to deal with there is the unions, who are not going to want to lose the jobs of the cab drivers. But But, you know, then there's the rest of the U.S. and the rest of the world, and that seems way less likely.
Let me tell you, as somebody who lives in a city that is really, really difficult to navigate by car, until you have a car that can drive its way through Boston, I'm not going to believe in the self-driving
car. That's, you know...
My GPS has enough trouble with it.
No, I think that's exactly right. Like, it's easier to have it be on a freeway in sunny California, right, than down a weird alleyway that used to be a cow path in Boston.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Good luck with that. I will be super impressed when Google brings its self-driving car to Boston.
Cut to Boston Alley. There's 8 Google cars all backed up in the alley. They can't get out. They're all stuck in there.
Yeah. Yeah, just people sort of shaking their heads. I can't get there from here.
No. No, that's where you can't go down that street. That's where the self-driving cars get stuck.
That's a good short story. I like that.
Yeah. Anything else about cars? We talked about cars today.
We did a lot. We talked a lot about cars. You know what? I like driving, and I feel like I bought a car. My car is now 4 years old and certainly is not in a position to be replaced anytime soon. But it was, I thought, you know, a year into owning this car or so, you know, especially as Tesla was ramping up and all that, I thought to myself, there's a very low probability that my next car won't be electric, I feel like. I feel like why would I buy another gas engine? I love driving. I drive a stick shift. I love driving. But it's hard for me to imagine, you know, 10 years from now or whenever. My last car lasted me, you know, 12, 13 years. If this car lasts me as long, it's hard to imagine that I won't be, you know, why would I buy a gasoline car? It just seems silly. So
I agree. Although I realized the other day that as excited as I was about the Tesla, and I'm as somebody who's not a super enthusiastic car, I'm like not a car fan or anything like that. I realized the electric part of it is not the part that I'm most excited about. The feature that I really want in my next car more than anything else is, I like the fact, I talked to somebody who has a Tesla and has used the auto drive basically feature, and that's what I want. As somebody who does a lot of, well, not a lot, but a few times a year, I go from San Francisco to LA, or from San Francisco to LA and then LA to Phoenix. It's long, relatively straight freeway, you know, interstate freeway drives. They're boring. There's nothing around. There's not even a whole lot of traffic. There are cars on the road, but we're all going the same place. I want that feature that means that I don't have to pay laser focused attention for 6 hours in the car between San Francisco and LA. I don't need to like be asleep even, or not sitting in the driver's seat, or even not like paying attention to my surroundings. I would just take a feature that means that I have to pay less attention to my surroundings because it's exhausting making a long drive like that. And I find out that's actually the feature I want the most is I want something that will navigate when the and some cars have some of this now, luxury cars do. When the traffic slows down, it slows down. Yep. When the road curves, it curves with the road. When it needs to get over because something weird is going on, it gets over. That's what I really want more than anything else, is something that just takes some of my mind off of the really long, boring, droning kind of drives.
I agree. I do a lot of driving in the city, but I also drive up to my family's place in Rochester, New York, which is literally get on I-90 and drive west for about 4 or 5 hours. And, you know, that's, like you're saying, it's not hard. It's a straight line for the most part.
Yeah.
And there's very few turns in there, and it does seem like a computer could do this.
Like, yeah, because all you're doing is like you're doing like range finding, which is that car's slowing down, I need to slow down. That car's speeding up, I need to speed up. This lane has gotten really slow, and the left lane has lots of openings and is going faster, so I'm going to pass the slow car and then move in. It's not rocket science, right? It's super easy, but you gotta do it.
I'm already using cruise control for a lot of that, right? Because why would I want to keep my foot on the gas?
Right,
for,
and they have smart
hours.
Cruise controls in cars now where they do the radar location, so it actually matches the car in front of you, which my cars don't have. And that even that would probably be better. But I I think that's why driving is so exhausting sometimes, driving long distances, is that. It's just you've got to focus. You've got to keep your attention on the road or you're going to get in a wreck, and it's for a long period of time. And, you know, computers should be able to do that, or at least do a lot of that. So that's the feature that I really want in my next car. I'm not sure it's entirely practical that I'll get it. But, you know, more than an electric drivetrain, that would be what I'd want. Although an electric car would be awesome, and I would like to have my next car, which I suspect will be the car we get after our kids go away to school and aren't here anymore. and we get rid of the minivan. My guess is that'll be the replacement car, but who knows?
Yep. Lots of options.
Well, we're working to everybody out there who's listening to this. Thank you for subscribing to Six Colors. We are working on the April magazine issue. I'm hoping to get that out actually in the next day or two. There's some nice stuff in there. Dan wrote a nice What I Use piece and is writing. It's not done yet. Another one of your wacky back page columns.
Yeah, I may have set myself up for failure on this one, but we'll see how it goes.
All right. And then I've got one more piece to write, which is a buy request, and we'll get that one out. So thanks to everybody for subscribing. And for your subscriptions, you know, you get to hear us yammer on once a week, and you get the monthly newsletter, and we appreciate your support. So until next week. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.